Hello, and welcome to The Love of Cinema, a Picture House podcast brought to you by Kia. My name is Lara Peters, I'm Picture House's content editor, and I am your host for the day. I'm delighted to introduce my conversation with Pablo Berger, the director of Robot Dreams, which is out now. You can go and see it, hopefully at your local Picture House, and you should bring a friend, because this is a film about friendship. Robot Dreams is based on Sarah Varon's graphic novel. It's a heartfelt story of a dog and a robot and their life together in New York in the 80s. And it's an absolute treat. It was just nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Oscars, and deservedly so. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Pablo was a total delight to talk to. And make sure to check the film out if you get the chance. You'll never listen to Earth, Wind & Fire in the same way again. Here's our interview. Enjoy. Welcome to the Picture House podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, I'm very happy. You know, I'm so excited about the UK release of Robot Dreams. So I'm happy to chat with you, Lara.
Of course. I loved Robot Dreams. It's such a special film, and it's just taken you all the way to the Oscars. So congratulations.
Thank
how
you.
How does it feel for the film to be arriving on the big screen after, I imagine, the sort of roller coaster of award season?
Yeah, no, it's been a really amazing roller coaster, because all it started in Cannes in May, because we were in the official selection. Then we went to Annecy, that, as you know, is the Cannes of animation. We went to CGS, the Cannes of fantasy, and we went to hundreds of festivals. And then we have the Goya, European Film Awards, and the cherry on the top, that is the Oscars. So I just came last night, well, 2 days ago, so it's been amazing. You know, it's been amazing because, you know, I'm a romantic director. For me, what is important is that to get as many people to watch my films, you know, to share the story of Robot Dreams. So the fact that it's been so well received by the festivals and the media and the critics, and of course the nomination for the Oscars, makes the film global. And that's what directors we really, really hope.
Completely. Yeah, this is your first animated feature, which must be so exciting for you as a filmmaker to step into this different medium. Have you always wanted to make an animated film, or is this something that kind of came out of nowhere for you?
Yeah, no, actually, I never thought about making an animation film in my life. I love animation, but I love animation as an audience, but never thought about making. The only reason is the graphic novel itself. You know, they're anthropomorphic characters. So there was, I did an animation, or I wouldn't have been able to tell this story. The thing, I read the book in 2010. I fell in love with it, but at that moment, I didn't think about making a film. I made two films. I made after that, after I read it, I made Blancanieves, I made Abracadabra. And in 2018, I read it again. Just, I was having a coffee, but this time when I read it, something happened at the end. I was moved, but I'm talking about deeply moved. I'm talking about, I was in tears.
Yeah, me too.
I'm glad. And I said, what's happening here? And what happened was that this time I made substitutions. I had lost people in from the first time I read the book to the second time. Mm. I had lost my parents. One of my best friends stopped being one of my best friends. So there were so many emotional roller coaster right in my head that I said, wow, this is an amazing story. If I make a film out of this book, I'm sure there is going to be a lot of people that are going to have also an emotional roller coaster ride like I did. Mm. And I think I was right.
Completely.
Because
absolutely.
I'm getting the feeling because I do a lot of Q&A and I love to meet the audience at the end of the screenings. And they're telling me such a beautiful thing, such a beautiful regressions that they're having, some experiences that they're having while watching the film.
Mm. Oh, that's really lovely. That's so great to hear. How would you compare directing live action to animation? How do you feel kind of, did you approach it differently? Do you approach it in a similar way?
Well, I was scared before I started the production. But the reality, it was just that it was much closer. It was not so different from live action. actually. There were much more things in common than differences. I think it's a natural transition, and I definitely encourage other live action director to try a new media, like the animation. The thing is that definitely one quality a director has to have if you go from live action to animation, it has to be patient, very patient. And I'm the type of director that I cook my project very slowly. I made four films in 20 years. So I'm really love detail and I'm very patient. So I think that I have it. Then I always do storyboards in my live action films for over a year. So that's something very natural animation. So actually, without knowing it, I had an animation director inside of me. But what it was actually the biggest difference, it was just instead of working with actors, you work with animators. And actually, that was the part that I thought I could bring something to the animation world. You know, I have worked with some of the best European actors, and I wanted to bring honest, truthful, real performance to the animation. Because for me, many times in the animated world, the animation is, the acting is overacting, they're indicating. And for me, I wanted to bring very honest, and then for me, less is more. And I had to feel like I had to get as good performances in animation than in live action. So that was for me that what I worked the most. And probably that was the part that I needed also help from a director of animation. I worked with Benoit Ferremont. He was in charge of the director of animation of Triplets of Belleville and the Book of Kells of Tom Moore. So that was a very exciting process to work with the animators.
Fantastic. Yeah. And although the film is animated, it feels very grounded in live action cinema to me. I know you've mentioned Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, like I caught references to things like Sherlock Jr. and obviously The Wizard of Oz. I'd love to know what you sort of drew from these classics of sort of both silent cinema and sort of golden age Hollywood cinema, and what inspired you about those films when you were making Robot Dreams.
Well, the thing is that before a director, I'm a film buff. I love cinema. I enjoy much more to go to the dark room and sit down in a comfortable seat and watch a film than making films. Making films, you have to wake up very early. It's very stressful. You know, definitely when it's finished, it's great. You know, now we're talking about the film and you travel all over the world, you go to the Oscars, fine, but making them is hell. But because I love cinema so much, I love that my film have a little bit of Where is Wally? I don't know this book. You call it Where is Wally?
Yeah, completely, yeah.
Of film references. I really have to have like little homage. So there are many, as you said,
yeah,
as you pointed out. But like my editor, Fernando Franco, that he had worked in Blancanieves and in this film, he always says, Pablo, it's just, instead of using a camera, you're using drawings and an artist, because it truly, they're very, you know, very, they're very similar. It's a brother or sister of my live action films. You know, I think the only true difference is that instead of using a camera, we are hand drawing the shots, but definitely it's very connected with my live action work. And especially thematically, because my films, all my live action films, there's emotion, there's humor, there's surprises, there's music, there's a love story. So those five ingredients, they're in all my films. And also I love editing, and I love ellipses, and I love film language, and I like to write with images. So for me, in a way, it was very natural, the transition to Robot Dreams.
So, and something that's so special about Robot Dreams is that lack of dialogue. I mean, it's a dialogue-free film, means that it's sort of the same in every language. Like, you don't have to have a dubbed version or subtitles or anything to communicate with any kind of audience. And have you found that that means it's sort of reaching audiences you might not necessarily have expected it to reach?
Well, it's amazing when you use wordless, when you make films that they are wordless, and I had done it before. I did Blancanieves.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you've made a silent film before.
So, and when I did Blancanieves, it was such an amazing experience for me, and I also reached like a global audience, and that's amazing when you make a wordless film. that the same film can play in Spain, in Korea, in Taiwan, in Uruguay, in Australia. It's amazing. It really is exactly the same film. You don't need to subtitle. There's no translation. It's just visual storytelling. And that's what makes film a unique art form when you write with images. So definitely it's very exciting. And also what happens is that when you make a wordless film, the film becomes like a musical. The experience is more like sensorial. The audience kind of dream awake. And in a way, it's closer to hypnotic experience. The audience can have a little regression and they can make their own substitutions. So the experience itself, it's very different from what you call a conventional film, what I'm trying to say, with dialogue, there are actors talking, but this film is more like I like to compare it like to dreaming awake when you make a wordless film.
Let's go somewhere new. See worlds we've never seen before, so that we can feel inspired. Whether you're sitting in a cinema or in one of our cars, inspiration comes when we feel something new. That's why our electrified range is designed to take you on inspiring journeys. Kia, proud supporter of independent cinema. Kia, movement that inspires.
Glad you brought up music, because obviously Wind and Fire's September plays a big role in the film. It's a song that I find like very moving. It's not necessarily a sad song, but I think it's so full of emotion. You really get swept up in the feeling of it. I'd love to know how you came to that song specifically, why that was the one you chose, and if there was like, did you try anything else, or was that, did you know that that was the song you wanted to use?
The thing is that in the first draft of the script already appeared.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because the film takes place from September 1 year to the following September.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
And I said, well, I need a song that reflects their relationship. And the first thing they do, the first time they do something very special together is they go to roller dance with their roller skates to Central Park. And I needed like a funky disco song. And you know, it came right away September from Earth, Wind and Fire. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, what if this song becomes their song, their theme song? And so in the film appears like a piano version, or they're whistling. And of course, in the final scene, we have like big references to September. And the amazing thing of the song is that in the lyrics, in the first line of the lyrics, appears the theme of the film. The song starts saying, do you remember the 21st night of September? Do you remember memories, how to overcome loss by the use of memory and as a balm? So definitely it was written for this film 40 years earlier, which is amazing. Right. So it's 1979, 45 years earlier, was written this song for this film.
Yeah, totally.
And it's amazing. Definitely my producer were very concerned when they read it that it was in the script, because as you know, the music rights are very, it gets a big chunk of the budget of a film. Mm. And these were very costly, but it was worth it every penny that they
spent. Completely worth it. Yeah, completely. The film is set in New York in the 1980s, and it feels like the song kind of perfectly captures that setting and that feeling. But so does everything else about the film. It's so vibrant and tactile. And even though it could sort of be set anywhere at any time, I'd love to know why the 80s and why New York. I know New York is personal to you.
Yes. The thing is that in the book, I don't know if you have read the book, but the book is like a nondescript city. It's American city. And, you know, the backgrounds are very simple, very schematic. When I decided to make the film, I clearly realized that it was important that New York will be the third protagonist. So the protagonists are Robot, Dog, and New York. And especially for one reason, because I lived in New York for 10 years and I wanted to make a love letter to New York. It was I wanted to make an ode to New York. So it also connects with my other films. All my films, even my short films and my feature films, they are period films. They're set in the past or in the future. So for me, it was fun to make a period film of a New York that I knew, a New York that has vanished. And I like the idea very much that cinema is like a time machine, that when the audience come to see my films, they travel in time and space. So for me, I wanted for Robot Dreams that the audience travel in time to New York in the 80s, a very unique time when New York was the cultural center of the world, you know, and that's the reason why I wanted to make this film. And actually the capital of the world, it was New York in the 80s, you know. Mm-hmm. Not now. I think now the capital could be anywhere because now everything is about the centralization. No, now you can feel that you know what's happening in the world.
Totally. That's great. I couldn't wrap up without asking you about robots. Robot is such a lovely character, and he feels like a sort of part of this long cinematic lineage of these kind of lovable robots. And I'd love to know, like, what sort of, did you have any points of inspiration for that? Like, who's your favorite movie robot, would you say? Other than Robot, obviously.
Well, the thing is that the origin of Robot, actually, it has to do with Sarah Baron when she wrote this book. Mm. She had her dog very sick at that time in 2000, in the early 2000s, and she had to take it to the vet and put it to sleep. So she felt that she abandoned her dog when she, and in reality, dog, Robot is Sarah Baron's dog.
Oh, yeah, sure.
She had to put to sleep and sacrifice. So this book was a way to overcome that loss. So Sarah Baron loves dogs. So that's the origin of the story. But if you ask me about robots, there are many in the history. Definitely, I love
The Iron Giant, robot.
Yeah, I love that one. Definitely, I love the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz. And somehow, I love a lot of the robots from Japanese animes and culture because it's very different. In Japan, a robot is a positive thing, but from historically, even if you go to like a, you know, any kind of Japanese anime, or even you go to like one of my favorite anime of the 70s, it was called Mazinger Z, or it's a positive, but in the Western world, robot has mainly a negative reference. But it, you know, I love this idea of that a robot can be a positive metaphor, no? And in our case, it was just a metaphor of the perfect friend or the perfect companion, somebody that is all generosity. But, you know, to spice up the conversation a little bit, I will tell you one of the most scary robots that it scared me when I was a kid. It was Jules Reiner in Westworld.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That really traumatized me when I was a kid. So Westworld, it was Jules Reiner with, you know, half of the head.
Sure. Yeah, I bet. Well, that's great. Thank you so much, Pablo, for your time. It's been lovely speaking to you. We're really excited to show the film on the big screen in our cinemas. Is there anything you'd like to tell people about the film, just as a passing message to say, you know, what should they expect when they come and see it on the big screen?
Well, thank you, Lara. No, for me, just the important thing of this film, that is an open film, that I don't want to exclude any audience. This is a film for cinephiles. Of course, it opening can. I'm a cinephile myself. This is a film for people that just want to have emotional and have a fun time in the movies, that just go once a week. And definitely it's also a film for kids. You know, it doesn't exclude the kids, even if it was not designed especially for them. You know, we want to treat the kids as adults. I think this is a good chance for once that the parents or the grandparents choose the film. Normally the kids choose the film. Maybe this time, maybe some, you know, parents or grandparents that are listening at your podcast, they just kind of like, you know, they say, okay, this sounds fun. I think you're going to like it, no?
I think so.
Everybody, you know, I'm the type of director that I want everybody to come and see Robot Dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. So do we.
Thank you, Lara.
Thank you very much, Pablo.
I think your podcast is like a megaphone right now. Step right in, come the 22nd of March. Go to see Robert Williams.
It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lara. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.